this parasitic other financialized economy that's feeding off the main economy and just sucking the money out. So there's never enough money in the real economy to pay for goods and services. You don't need to force austerity on people who didn't do it, who weren't liable for it, you know, who weren't at fault, which is what we tend to do because we pretend like that money actually is owed to somebody, but it's not. It was created as credit on the books. It can be written off. The globalists want to own everything, and they're getting very close to doing it. They want an independent system that's not controlled by government.
Innovation, disruption, and big issues. This is Business Game Changers with Sarah Westall.
Game Changers, I'm Sarah Westall. Today we have one of the smartest people in economics coming and talking to us. Her name is Ellen Brown, and she's an author. She's written over 10 books. She's written the national bestseller Web of Debt, which has sold more books than almost any economic book out there. She is an amazing person, and we're going to be talking a lot about, well, we're going to talk to her about the economy. We're going to talk to her about public banking, cryptocurrencies. She looks at things differently, and she's extremely bright. I think a lot of people don't quite understand where she's coming from or why she's saying stuff. So I'm hoping I was able to get her to open that up for people so that they understand more her perspective. A lot of people, when they're talking about cryptocurrencies or banking or whatever, they just shoot at the hip and they're not saying things that are necessarily grounded in economics. And I think she's coming at it from a different perspective, but very grounded. And she likes public banking. And I know a lot of people don't like the idea of public banking because our government's involved. But she wants you to understand that our government's going to be involved anyway. And so how do we keep our government involved in a way that maximizes the money coming to the people? That's her concept. So we also get into the debt, and we get into black money. Where is that debt? Can we get it back? Lots of things that we talk about. So I hope you stick around for this whole interview, and let's welcome Ellen Brown to the show. Hi, Ellen. Welcome back to the program.
Hi, Sarah. Great to be talking to you.
Yeah, I've been wanting to talk to you for a while about the economy and the things that you're doing. I wanted to pick your brain on it. But let's get started. Let's dive right into it. Is the economy, if not fundamentally restructured, doomed to collapse?
No. First of all, the deep state has $40 trillion in black money, according to Catherine Austin Fitz, which means that they can collapse it if they want to, and they can keep it up if they want to. It's just a question of, not being an insider, I can't tell you whether it's going to collapse or not, but it's not doomed to collapse. We have a nearly $21 trillion debt, but we also have a nearly $21 trillion M3 money supply. Our debt is our money supply. In other words, people think that money is a thing that just comes into existence, it stays there forever, like gold or coins or something, but it's not. Virtually all of our money is credit and debt. That's what it is. It's bank credit. And if you've got a credits on one side, you've got to have a debt on the other side. I mean, it's just a balance sheet thing. There's nothing wrong with our $21 trillion debt, except for the interest that we pay on it. And that keeps going up. And therefore, we keep, you know, having a debt ceiling problem. And then you have to have Congress vote on the debt, et cetera. But it's actually good to have the money supply expand. And that means the debt expanding. And the reason is that, it has to do with social credit. I don't know. The thing is, you've got a GDP that you need to have the money out there to buy. You need enough money to buy the goods and services that the people make. And a lot of money doesn't go into goods and services. People don't spend all the money that they make, even, let alone this parasitic other financialized economy that's feeding off the main economy and just sucking the money out. So there's never enough money in the real economy to pay for goods and services. So the very things that we make, in other words, we make those for ourselves, supposedly, but we the people, the wage earners, don't have enough money to pay for them. So you need to get some extra money out there one way or another. So it's not so bad that the money supply is expanding.
Okay, well, like you said, the debt is okay because that's how we, but should we be paying interest on that debt? If the government was issuing its own money and we didn't have a third party doing it, would we need to be paying any interest?
A very good point. No, I don't think we need to pay interest. I mean, we should borrow directly. I mean, if you want to borrow, for some reason, the government's more comfortable borrowing than issuing. They think issuing it would be inflationary, although it wouldn't actually. But I mean, I could show that by numbers. But anyway, let's say they want to borrow it. They can borrow it directly from the Federal Reserve, which is their bank, of course, which creates the money out of nothing. And the Fed rebates its profits to the government. So in other words, the interest goes back to the government. Of course, they take a little out for their fees, I mean, you know, to pay their staff or whatever. But basically, if we actually funded it all through our own central bank, which is something that we did do historically, and then in the 1930s, the banks insisted that we not do that directly, and so we had to go through this whole, these 22 special banks that are allowed to buy the government's debt, and then they sell it on. In other words, we have to go through the open market and sell it to whatever investors, but we could be borrowing directly from our own central bank. The Federal Reserve contains a big chunk of our federal debt already.
And so we can just overnight say, we're done. We're not going to do it like this anymore. And we're going to do it like this. And then that debt or that interest that we have been spending can then be used on us, the people, the infrastructure, things that we need to survive.
Exactly. We pay something like $400 billion annually in interest on the federal debt. Okay, I'm sure, I think I've got my numbers now. Okay, $4.5 trillion is how much is that the Federal Reserve has, of which $3.7 trillion was quantitative easing, and I think more than half of that, I think $2.7 trillion is the federal securities, and the rest is mortgage-backed securities.
Okay, so now let's talk about this black budget that you're talking about, the black money, because overnight we could take care of that debt. We could stop borrowing from other banks. Why would we even, I want to talk about why we would borrow other than enriching people with power. I want to talk if there's any political need to do that. But overnight we could pay off that debt with the black money that's ours, and we could recoup the interest payments that we're paying now by issuing our own money and get to the private banking system that you're talking about, or the public banking system that you're talking about.
Right. Or as Catherine Austin Fitz points out, that we've got a $21 trillion debt. Before you call it a debt, you've got to look at your balance sheet. And there's $21 trillion that they've already documented in undocumented adjustments just from the military and HUD, which was where she used to work. So this is undocumented adjustments, means money they didn't account for. In other words, they've stolen the money. So if we even just get that money back on the balance sheet, then we don't have any debt at all. It's, you know, we can pay ourselves off. We can pay that debt off.
Well, who stole it, and do we have the money, and is it recoverable?
Well, that's a good question. So it's the military, and who are the military? And of course, I saw somebody said recently that maybe it was when I was watching one of your interviews, I forget, that the president won't even have clearance to know. I mean, won't even have clearance to see into all these things until like 2 years into his presidency. So who knows what secrets are buried? It seems to me we shouldn't have any secrets. I mean, this whole idea about military secrets, we don't even need that. It should all be transparent. If we had total transparency for what's going on in our government, we could trust our government, because we could sue when they're violating the Constitution or whatever.
It's big farce right now. We can't even fix things because we don't even know what's going on half the time, because exactly, it's all top secret. And so now all they do is make things they mess up top secret, or things they want to hide top secret. And we already know, according to Bill Binney and others, that NSA is not doing what they should be doing as far as keeping people safe. We could keep all these terror attacks you know, we could keep stop them. They're probably false flags, but we could stop them, even the internal false flags or anything like that, we could stop from happening if they would use the tools in which they were intended to be used for and not be going against our constitutional private rights.
Yeah, I agree.
Yes. Yeah. So, okay. Well, now that we agreed on that.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many things we could fix if we were up there with the power to fix them. We know it can be done. So, in other words, the economy does not have to collapse. We can fix the economy. And if we had, or if Trump is like Roosevelt, although it seems to me he's totally surrounded and he doesn't seem to have the freedom we're hoping he might have to actually pull off some of the things he said he would do. But he could change the whole system, you know, just like pay off the debt, for example. Roosevelt said, well, we're stuck with the reason we've got a problem is we don't have enough gold, so we're just going to go off the gold system. Well, that was like totally unheard of. People were saying, well, you can't do that. And he did it. And in other words, I've just written about this. Every 20 or 30 years, we have changed the monetary system. We can and we will change it again. We know we will. That's what the Federal Reserve did in 2008. They said, okay, here's what we're going to do. And they started just lending free money to the banks, which they hadn't done before, and called it quantitative easing, and bought toxic assets off the banks, which I think is perfectly good. Much better to have the central bank buy these toxic assets and, you know, basically put them back to zero. I mean, well, it's a long story, but the thing I write about all the time is, where does our money come from? Our money is actually created by banks when they make loans. So if we're talking about bank loans that go bad, this is what the Chinese do. They know that they just issued that money. They just issued credit. That's what they did when they were actually communist. So they switched over and pretended to balance their books when they had to join the World Trade Organization and they were required to balance their books. But they still just, if they have some bad loans, they just write them off because nobody's hurt. Nobody actually put up the money. The money was just created as an accounting entry. So you can write off those accounting entries if you need to save your economy. You don't need to force austerity on people who didn't do it, who weren't liable for, you know, who weren't at fault, which is what we tend to do because we pretend like that money actually is owed to somebody, but it's not. It was created as credit on the books. It can be written off.
So then why are we doing that? Why are we making this big pretend austerity deal?
Well, I think to force governments to privatize, that the globalists versus, let's call it the globalists versus the nationalists, as people have characterized it, the globalists want to own everything, and they're getting very close to doing it. They want an independent system that's not controlled by government. So what they want to do is buy up everything the government currently owns, which is us. I mean, everything the people currently own collectively, they want to buy it up, they want to own it, and they want to rent it back to us. And they're doing a pretty good job. They've bought up an amazing amount of stuff now, like Detroit. I mean, that's what they want to do. They want to put cities into bankruptcy. They don't want cities to get cheap credit. I mean, banks can get cheap credit fine because they are the banks. But they could just as easily have given cities 0% loans, just like they gave the banks 0% loans. But they wouldn't do it because they say it's not in their mandate. Well, that's true, but Congress could change the mandate. I mean, the mandate just came from Congress. But Congress won't do it because they too are big business, controlled by big business, controlled by big business interests, and they want to privatize everything.
Well, how many people actually understand it that's up in Congress? I mean, isn't that part of the problem too?
It's a huge part of the problem, but also I think they're controlled. I think you've got three things going on. A, that you know, the totally clean ones that they can't get anything on don't understand the system. And then there are people who they have control files on because, you know, they've managed to take pictures of them doing something that they shouldn't have been doing or whatever. And three, they need the money for their campaigns. And so they do whatever their big investors want. So the first thing we have to do is get rid of that. We have to set up a system somehow that you don't need big money in order to win. You should win because you're actually the most qualified. But
I don't know
when that's ever going to happen.
Okay, so the Federal Reserve, a lot of people are really, really dislike the Federal Reserve because we can't audit it. We have no idea what's going on. It feels like it's a private institution. And people say it's a private institution. So, but you're saying it's our bank. So can you explain what it really is?
Well, it is composed of 12 branches, all of which are 100% owned by the banks in their districts. And so, in that sense, it is definitely a private institution. And the biggest and the one that calls the shots is the New York Federal Reserve, which is obviously where all the Wall Street banks are. So the Wall Street banks are calling the shots, and the Fed's first duty is to protect the banks and keep that system going. I'm just saying it's a tool that we could use, that could be used for our benefit. It's not necessarily right now. It's under the control of other interests. But it's there, and there's no reason that the economy has to collapse. We can use the tools we have if we had an enlightened Congress or whatever, an enlightened Fed head or somebody who actually wanted to put those tools to use. And they have put those tools to use. I mean, I thought it was a good thing that they bought up federal securities because it's the cheapest way for us, the people, to fund government instead of having to be, sell it all off to the Chinese, and then we're beholden to the Chinese, and then we start worrying about whether the Chinese are going to buy our debt or whether they're going to dump our debt. It doesn't matter if the Chinese dump our debt. Everything they dump are the either the Federal Reserve will buy, or we actually force those 22 banks to buy the debt. I mean, they don't really have a choice but to buy the debt, and they buy it quite cheaply, and then they on lend it.
Okay, well, now the Federal Reserve can't or is never audited. Don't you think that's a major issue that we, at least the president, at least a certain banking committee, somebody that is elected should have the right, we should have the right to monitor what the Fed's doing?
Yeah, and there's talk about that, and one hopes that maybe this administration will manage to pull that off. I mean, there are many things we're hopeful that this administration might be able to do that they have said, or Trump has said he would do, but he does seem to be pretty much blocked at the moment by whatever, captured by the deep state, I guess. Who knows? I think they take him into a little room and they get elected and show him a picture of the video of the Kennedy assassination, and that's pretty much the end of
You
it.
don't do what we want, this is what's going to happen to you. Okay,
Or
well.
if they do it, they have to do it very low key, which is what we hope is happening. We hope things are happening behind the scenes, like those 200 indictments that nobody knows exactly what's happening there. But it's
852 at this point.
852. Wow.
It's growing very quickly.
Yeah.
Let's get into what you're really an advocate of. You are an advocate for public banks. People have witnessed unbelievable corruption by the government. And I know I already asked some of this, but I want you to really dive into this. They're wary of the government being involved at all in anything because of the deep state and how they only care. It seems that they only care about themselves. We don't have people that are elected that care about the country. Would a public banking solution be inviting more government and corruption? I mean, how do we keep it for the people, by the people?
Well, we have one only state-owned bank, and that is the Bank of North Dakota, and they are not corrupt. They are very good for the local economy. Everybody there loves them. The local bankers love them because they partner with the local banks. So they're basically like a banker's bank. But what they do is keep their money in the state for their own purposes. And once you understand how banking works, you can either take your money as a loan fund and lend it out. Once, say you've got $1 billion, you lend it out at 3%, wait for it to come back, and then lend it again. Or you can take that $1 billion, make it the capital of a bank, and you can lend it 10 times over. So technically, you can make 30%. Of course, really, you've got to pay for your liquidity, so you're probably going to pay 1% on your deposits. But overall, it works out to about you can make five times as much on your money if you use it as capital for a bank as if you lend it out directly. And all local governments already have these loan funds. So basically what we're talking about here is just a more efficient way to use your money. Instead of sending it off to Wall Street, where they are going to do this, multiply it many times over and use it for their purposes, which may actually even hurt your estate, you're going to do that yourself. You'll have control over who gets the credit, on what terms, et cetera. And in order to prevent corruption, you just bake that into your charter. You say you can do this, this, and this. You hire basically civil servants. There's no bonuses, fees, commissions. There's no motivation to gamble and speculate because you're not going to make any more money off it. Your job depends on doing a good job according to whatever these parameters that you're given, which are basically serving the public interest. If you don't do that, you get fired.
What's keeping us from doing that? We have this shining example in North Dakota. Why are people not able to replicate it? Any state at this point, even though North Dakota is thriving under that system compared to other states?
Well, I think, again, it's a matter of not understanding how the system works. Most people think that banks take in money and lend it out again. And then they say, well, it's going to be risky for the government. Government can't do anything right. It'll be corrupt, et cetera. The government will be influencing it. But that's not what we're talking about. So first of all, you just have to understand the model and why you're better off using your own money for your own purposes than sending it off to Wall Street and letting them do it and letting them take huge fees. And we all know how corrupt Wall Street is. But we have a lot more interest now. I mean, we have, well, Santa Fe has probably gotten the farthest. They've finished their feasibility study. They've determined that even this little city of Santa Fe can turn a profit within a year just by refinancing their own debt. In other words, it's a cheaper way to finance your own debt, your own city's debt, than to send it, than to do a bond issue and pay all this money to the bond, you know, the banks for the bond. And we've got Washington State has a feasibility study that they're doing. New Jersey just elected a governor, Phil Murphy, who is Goldman Sachs banker, and that's why he understands what we're talking about. I mean, he understands the potential, and so he immediately got it as soon as he heard this idea, and he took it and ran with it, and that is the funding basis of his platform. That's how he's going to fund all the things he promised in his platform. So we're very
hopeful.
So
he can actually do something. Well, now people are starting to understand that the bonds that are being issued that are going through Wall Street has been corrupted. There's a lot of examples of corruption and cities being taken advantage of. So do you think more people are opened up to your idea of not using Wall Street because of all the examples of people being swindled?
Yeah. Well, and you have a number of cities that have actually passed resolutions saying they're not going to put their money in Wells Fargo, for example, which blatantly created these 2 million bank accounts that were fraudulent. But then, so if you pull all your money out of Wells Fargo, where do you put it? That you put it in another Wall Street bank that also has a litany of felonies, or what would be felonies if anybody else did it. The local banks really don't want any more of those deposits than they have because they have to collateralize them at 110%. It's a long story. But anyway, they can't really use them. So it's sort of a natural fit. If you're gonna divest from Wells Fargo or divest from Wall Street, where do you put your money? Set up your own bank. It's a much more efficient way to do it than any other option.
And so we're getting more and more politicians that are starting to see this, more and more people that are going, okay, this is a smart way to go. How close are we to seeing a city being set up that way?
Well, Phil Murphy's liable to be the first in New Jersey just because he's got the political will. If you had the political will, you could skip all these feasibility studies and just do it because you would understand what you were doing. But because you've got all these politicians you have to persuade, Santa Fe could be the first to get their bank set up. But now, a week ago, John Chung, who's the treasurer in California, did a press conference where they've been looking into a bank to handle the cannabis money, a publicly owned bank. And that's because, so cannabis is going to be legal for all purposes in January here in the state, and they're anticipating a $7 billion business, of which $1 billion is taxes or would go to taxes. So of course they have a financial interest in tracking that money, but also there's the concern about crime, that you have people breaking into these businesses and raiding their basements or wherever they're keeping all this cash. I mean, cash is just not a very efficient way to run a business. But the problem is that the Federal Reserve will not give them a master account. I mean, that Colorado has already gone through this for 5 years, and they can't persuade the Fed to let them basically participate in the banking system, which is what a master account lets you do. So I don't know how they're going to get around that hurdle, but they are looking closely at that, and they've been working on it since February. So just that motivation might be enough to push California into it. And California is the sixth largest economy in the world. I mean, if you ask me, we should be our own country, but at the very least, we should have our own central bank, or at least have our own banking system. I mean, you could, if you were desperate enough, you could set up a banking system that only happened in California. It's still a big enough place that, I mean, you probably would wind up, I suppose it would be a revolution, but anyway, it could be done. Or you could
there's just that little side issue. But now that's interesting that the marijuana issue, the cannabis issue, could force them to set up a central bank, and the Federal Reserve could be forcing something ultimately it didn't know it was causing to happen. I mean, they would figure it out pretty quick. They're pretty bright, but they think that they're keeping the industry down.
Yeah, there are a number of reasons that, I mean, you have little revolutions going on everywhere, not actual physical revolutions, but there are a number of reasons. The U.S. is really too big, I mean, to be one government, because we've got different interests in different parts of the country, and that's why you have, I mean, that's really why you have political parties that are so opposed to each other. We just don't understand those people, whatever.
Well, we all have different issues. I think I think you're right. Well, and then the media's creating a farce. So you're not the first one I've talked to at this point that says that the United States needs to be restructured politically as well, because we're just too big. We used to have representation like 1 to 6,000, something like that. Now it's 1 to 1 million. And it's just gotten out of hand.
Yeah. Well, there are many things we could do to restructure the whole system. But again, it's a matter of political will and getting our voices heard. But like for you and me, we're just out there getting information out, planning ideas. Like, this is what we could do.
Well, I'm just worried that it'll get violent before we can do something smart. Because, you know, I have a lot of people talking to me about the fact that they see things coming. I just don't want it to be violent. I think we could be smart, and we could do some smart stuff and restructure stuff without violence. But now let's talk about crypto. Okay. I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's the thing. If California set up their own banking system, it would be revolutionary, but it wouldn't be a bloody revolution. It would just be fine. You know, we're going to keep our own money. We give more money to the federal government than they give back to us. So they would miss us if we pulled their money out.
Well, and if you pulled your money out and you started running independently, we would start going in other directions and things, which would probably be okay. It would be decentralizing. You know, in a business, you decentralize, push things down. Right now, we're so centralized that it's causing issues. But let's talk about cryptocurrencies, because, you know, the digital world is our future. And right now we have digital money, essentially. Everything's is pretty much digital, but it's just a nightmare. It's like having a paper bag in the middle of your kitchen table. It's so easy to take. So we need a different crypto, you know, we need a different system for doing this. And cryptocurrency seems to be at least secure in that way. Do you see this as becoming the main way to exchange funds as we go forward?
I think we're definitely going to cryptographic currency, but I don't see a private cryptocurrency replacing the dollar, because it just can't. I mean, the Bitcoin can't do it. It's already like 1/100,000th of the size of M2. I mean, if you were using it to buy a cup of coffee, even right now, you would stand in line for an hour, which is not going to work. And if you scale it up, I mean, the problem is the more people you have using it, the slower it is, And the more transaction fees you're going to have, it's already like $2 for a transaction fee, which you're not going to pay for a cup of coffee. And that's just for 1/100,000th of the money supply. What happens when you gear it up to cover everybody's personal transactions? I mean, it's perfectly good for what it's used for now, which is like, let's say you're in China and you want to get your money out of the country, or you have a big $50,000 deal that you're doing abroad or something like that. That's good. It works for that. But it's not going to replace the national currency. But I think the national currency right now, people think that money is like gold. I mean, that was the idea, that to get a cryptocurrency where it would be issued by the people. But it's not issued by the people. It's issued by miners who have very expensive equipment, and they have very sophisticated knowledge that the rest of it don't have. I'm not going to be issuing any Bitcoins. There's no way I could issue a Bitcoin. It is not money issued by the people. And nor are these other, you know, there are other things that are more efficient than Bitcoin, cryptocurrencies, but they too are not issued by the people. But our national currency actually is issued by the people, in the sense that it is a monetization of your own promise to pay. That's where money comes from. You go to the bank and you turn your promise to pay into money. I mean, your grocer is not going to take your promise to pay, but your grocer will take the bank's promise to pay. And all you have done is swap your promise to pay for theirs. I mean, what the grocer is getting is bank money. It is not Federal Reserve money. I mean, it is not money issued by the federal government. It is money issued by the bank directly. It's like, originally they actually had bank notes that had their names on them individually. And then when the federal government tried to tax the bank notes, then the state banks, rather than joining the federal system, which was what the purpose was of this tax, what they did, many of the state banks, was to go to checks. So they would just write the number into your account when you took out a loan. They didn't pay you actual bank notes like they used to do that were printed up that they would have to pay 10% tax on. They would just give you a check, and you basically would write your own, you're writing your own bank notes on your, on this checkbook, which is guaranteed essentially by the bank. And the bank is willing to guarantee your money because they know where to find you. They, you may have put up some collateral. They know how to garnish your wages or whatever it takes. And you're going to pay them some interest. You're going to pay them a fee for this service. And therefore, they will guarantee your IOU. And that's what our money is. So that could be made much safer and get the middlemen out of there and much less manipulable with the cryptographic system. In other words, I think that's coming.
Go ahead.
Well, in India, for example, they've virtually done it where they, I know it was very controversial, the fact that they demonetized, but more than, most Indians couldn't get a bank account because they didn't have an ID. So I think it was in 2010, they started this thing where they gave everybody an ID using thumbprints and eye prints. The reason they didn't have IDs was they weren't born in hospitals. They were poor people. And also they have massive poor people. So not only do they want these people to get bank accounts in order to keep track of the money, they want people to be able to get credit. Like these little local vendors, street vendors, they would be paying 60% interest or whatever, in typical payday lender money rates, because they didn't have a bank account and nobody knew who they were, et cetera. Well, now they've come up with this thing called India Stack, where you have all your data in your cell phone. So you've got your credit history, whatever, payment history, where to find you, who you are, all those things that a bank would look at in order to give you a loan. And so these little street vendors are now getting, they can put out in the morning, they say, I need X amount of money to pay for workers and materials or whatever, you know, pay for my oranges that I'm going to sell, and I'll pay you back at night. And so they can get like a one-day loan on their cell phone. It might go through a bank. It might be a peer-to-peer lender that, I mean, they get, it's kind of like Uber. They get all these offers on their cell phone and they say, okay, I'll take that one because that looks like the best deal. They get a cheap loan for the day, pay it back with the proceeds of the sale of the oranges or whatever it was. And so you're getting microcredit that is, it's all on the cell phone. And effectively, let's say that it was borrowed from a bank. we know the banks do not, I mean, they're just monetizing your own credit. They are not putting up their own money. And if it's paid back at the end of the day, they don't even have to pretend to be drawing that money from somewhere else. They don't have to borrow it from their deposits or anything because they don't have to balance their books till the end of the day. So basically, they are just the guarantor guaranteeing your loan, you know, backing the thing up. So really, the people are creating their own credit. They can do it on the cell phone. They don't have to go into the bank. It's all digitalized. So it does seem to me that one day banking will just be like anything else you do on the internet or like you do on your cell phone. You don't need these middlemen manipulators that, I mean, you would still, I think, sorry.
That's okay.
So anyway, you might need bankers for some functions. I mean, it's kind of cold to say that it's all based on smart contracts. What if the smart contract says you can get it under the, you know, you can get credit if you qualify in this way, but what if you really should have qualified? I mean, if your local banker knew you personally and knew your family and knew you were good for it, they might give you a loan. And so for that sort of thing, you still need the personal touch. It's not like we want to get all the people out of the system.
Well, but if we did that, it'd turn into a technocracy nightmare, right? I mean, yeah. it would turn into a nightmare, but yet we have to figure out how to balance out technology with people. Otherwise we're,
right.
Yeah,
right.
Yes. So now that the Indians, because it was a change, and so people just, you know, anytime you do a change, there's chaos and people fighting and the big guys are taking over and we hate you and everything else. But now that it's implemented, are people liking it over in India?
Well, they reelected that government, the Modi government. So that was taken as a vote of confidence in this system. I think it was March when the election was, and that they demonetized in November. But they didn't need to demonetize. They shouldn't have demonetized. Many people, critics there at the time, said it was a bad idea, and Modi himself was very ambivalent about it, and it did create chaos. But the, you know, one good thing is it created a lot more bank accounts because a lot of people did turn their, I mean, I think I read that 97% of this cash did come into the banks. I mean, there was many inefficiencies. The ATMs weren't set up right for the new bills, and, you know, people did suffer. But you have to understand the Indian mentality. They have been desperately poor since the 1940s. I mean, there was a massive, massive famine right when they became a country. So they nationalized something like 70% of the banks. I think it was Indira Gandhi nationalized the banks. I mean, she forced the 14 largest banks to be nationalized, not because they were bankrupt. Like, you know, we might nationalize our banks in another 2008 situation. That was a discussion in 2008, whether we should nationalize the banks. But it was because they weren't serving the poor properly. I mean, can you imagine President Trump saying, well, the banks aren't serving the people properly, so we're going to nationalize them, and just doing it. But Indira Gandhi could get away with it. I mean, that's the way their system is. And that's, people accepted that, and they still accept it. And they still, I mean, I saw interviews of people on the street, and they said, well, it was a bit painful and all that, but, you know, it's all for the good. I mean, they bought the party line, I guess, that it was a good thing. I mean, I think it was a bad thing. I don't think they should have demonetized. But anyway, there is no reason for us to demonetize. We already have 95% digital currency, and we need that other 5%. What happens when the computers go down? What happens when your cell phone battery dies?
Exactly.
Or whatever? You want some backup. You need some gold for backup. You need whatever. You need Bitcoin, if assuming your cell phone still works, or, you know, assuming you still have the internet. So I think we'd have a revolution if they tried to demonetize.
Yeah, they're not going to mess around doing that here.
No, they might take away. They did take away some big bills, and I don't think anybody really noticed. But
well, I mean, yeah, you know, no one talked about it. The alternative media didn't talk about it, so nobody really noticed, I guess.
Like, if you take away the $10,000 bill, ordinary people aren't really going to notice. Because
no.
We don't have any $10,000 bills.
Yeah, well, no. Unfortunately, no. So getting back to the concept of technocracy, the idea that where everything gets so automated that it becomes a nightmare, because now you all get put into, I always call it the McDonald's drive-through, where you don't fit the process, but you get crammed through it and it doesn't work for you. How do you see us making sure that doesn't happen?
Well, that is a very good question. But that's why I say, if you still want to keep your local friendly banker, or, you still want to keep people in there. In fact, I read somewhere that it's not true that all the jobs can be automated, because machines will break down. You need human beings monitoring the machines.
Yeah, but we don't want just the mechanics working. We need the people where the machines can't make the logical decisions, and where it's more of an art, we need people doing it.
Right, right. Yeah. But whether that'll happen, who knows? I mean, I think there is actually a big push to turn us into machines, like to actually control our minds. I mean, if you want to go back to Sumeria and Enlil and Enki, eating of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, that was having a moral judgment. There was one side of this division between whatever that wanted us to not have moral judgment, that wanted us to just be machines that would be workers and shoot people on demand without having any feeling about it. So whether they can do that, they may be able to do it. They may be doing that right now with chemtrails. Who knows?
Oh, I hope not. I don't want to be part of the machine. I'm the one that was shut down and not work anymore. Right? Yeah. We're already pulling out.
Yeah. Well, okay.
Yeah. There's certain ones of us that have already rejected a certain amount of that control, and we always have to be on, looking at it from a high view of what the system's doing. Otherwise, we wouldn't be talking about all this stuff all the time. And all the listeners are more like that, too, because they wouldn't be trying to learn about all this stuff all the time. But, okay, let's talk about the current political climate, because it is strange right now. And I want to see what you think of what's really going on. Do you think that our government is starting to be cleaned up, or do you think it's almost like two gangs fighting?
Both. Well, I don't know. I mean, I think there was an intent to clean it up, but whether they're pulling it off, who knows? But I do think those 800 sealed indictments are promising. It's as a writer, it's an extremely interesting time to be alive. There is so much to explore and write about.
Well, I'm excited about those indictments. I get goosebumps thinking about what that could be, because I've been covering some pretty hard topics for a good couple of years. And so when I hear this, I'm like, oh, I just hope, because we have so many issues, and we can't even, the things that we're talking about here, those things won't get cleaned up, and we won't be able to get onto a better road until we get rid of that base corruption. I mean, like Catherine Austin Fitz is talking about that 41 trillion, or I think that's the number you said. We're not going to be able to touch any of that with corruption being completely everywhere. There's no way.
Yeah, right. Agreed.
Okay, so let's wrap this up. How can people learn more about you? I think you have a book coming out. You have a boatload of other books that you've written that, some are national bestsellers and all sorts of things. So where can people learn more about you? When is your book coming out? And tell us about yourself.
Mm-hmm. My websites are ellenbrown.com and publicbankinginstitute.org, which is not my website, but that's my organization. I'm chairman. And I have 12 books all available on Amazon, among other places. My two on banking are Web of Debt and the Public Bank Solution. The one I'm working on is called The Coming Revolution in Banking, Democratizing Money in the Digital Age, where I talk a lot about cryptocurrencies and how we could fix the system, basically, and why regulation won't work. The things they're trying to do aren't going to work. So we have to have a different fix, and then I propose what I think is the different fix. And my first 10 books were on alternative healthcare and basically the medical pharmaceutical cartel.
When do you expect that book to come out?
Well, I expect to be done in like 2 more weeks, but then there's all those things that you have to go through to get it published. So,
So when that book comes out, I want to talk to you again because I want to really dive into the cryptocurrencies because it's a hot topic. We have all these big, I call the Bitcoin people a cult because it's kind of weird. I've been talking to Kels Wilson, who was actually the first one to patent and use blockchain. He came up with blockchain independently and patent and use it in an application. First one to do it in the world. And his version of blockchain actually can scale. He has a whole bunch of different things that he does with it. And so it really could be a useful product for cryptocurrencies, although he's not as interested in cryptocurrencies. He does it for more preventing fraud in documents and things. But I think it could be used. Once you put that book out, I'd really like to bring you back if you're okay with that.
Okay, that'd be great. Thanks, Sarah. Good to you.
Yeah, thank you so much.